All right, gentlemen, welcome back. I'm Tarek, addict alcoholic. All right, I want to forward to the second edition and the fourth edition. I'm in a third edition, so my page numbers might be a little bit different, but it's XVI in my book. What is it in yours?
Two pages later. XV.
Right here. What's that in yours? Yeah, it's XVI.
It's after the fourth edition. Right.
All right, so I'm sort of picking up part of right after Bill and Bob meet, and then Bob, he decides to go through it all, and our program was founded on Dr. Bob becoming willing to make all his amends, which is step eight. And so the bottom of the paragraph on XVI says, this physician, Dr. Bob, had repeatedly tried spiritual means to resolve his alcoholic dilemma, but had failed. But when the broker gave him Dr. Silthor's description of alcoholism and addiction and its hopelessness, the physician began to pursue the spiritual remedy for his malady with a willingness he had never before been able to muster. He sobered, never to drink again, up to the moment of his death in 1950. And this is what I really want to talk about. This seemed to prove that one alcoholic can affect another, or one addict can affect another, as no non-alcoholic non-addict can. It also indicates that strenuous work, one addict with another, one alcoholic with another, is vital for permanent recovery. This reinforces what I said earlier, that the real work in CA and AA is taking others through the steps. And then they introduced us to this idea that you can have permanent recovery. You guys have probably all been going to meetings for a while. What do they say? We don't drink one day at a time. We don't pick up one day at a time. That's not what I have been taught. The Big Book references the 24-hour day period twice. Once in Bill's story, it says faith must work in us and through us 24 hours a day. And then in the step 11, it says that we think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Nowhere does it say that we don't drink one day at a time. So what I've learned through my teachers and my sponsors is that I've learned how to live my life a day at a time. But I know if I'm grounded in the middle of that circle triangle, I will have permanent recovery. Permanent. I will promise you that. A lot of people say they don't like to make any promises or guarantees, but the Big Book's full of promises. And I promise you, if you stay active in recovery, unity, and service, you will get clean and sober, you will stay clean and sober, and you will die clean and sober. But the reality of what we're dealing with is a world in which the illness wins the majority of the time. Very few people get clean, get sober, stay clean and sober, and die clean and sober in one of these 12-step fellowships. I mean, look, you don't see a lot of guys with 20, 25, 30, 35, 40 years. Why is that? Because they ain't there. They're not willing to weather the storm because the storm is coming. The trials and low spots of life are coming. If we fail to enlarge our spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, we will not survive them. How do we enlarge our spiritual life and grow in understanding and effectiveness? By being grounded in the middle of that circle and that triangle. Active in recovery, active in unity, and active in service. All right, we're going to go to the doctor's opinion, and that would be XXVI. Okay, I want to read something. This is after William Silkworth's first letter. He says, the physician, and this is explained in the letter, the physician, Dr. Silkworth, who at our request gave us this letter, has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views in another statement, which follows. In this statement, the doctor confirms that we who have suffered alcoholic and addict torture must believe, there's that word must, that the body of the alcoholic and the addict is quite as abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking or using just because we were maladjusted to life, that we were in full flight from reality and were outright mental defectives. These things were true to some extent, in fact, to a considerable extent with some of us. But we are sure that our bodies were sickened as well. In our belief, any picture of the addict or alcoholic which leaves out this physical feature or this physical factor is incomplete. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol and or drugs interests us. An allergy is anytime you have an abnormal reaction. As laymen, our opinion as to its soundness may, of course, mean little. But as ex-problem drinkers and drug users, we can say that his explanation makes good sense. And this is what I really want to talk about. It explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account for. And so before I used my memories of my experiences around alcohol and drugs and the idea that my experience abundantly confirms to me that once I put alcohol and several drugs in my body, all bets are off. I can't tell you how much I'm going to do. I can't tell you where I'm going to end up. I can't tell you how long it's going to last. All bets are off. And so I did a lot of nasty things to a lot of good people. I harmed a lot of people during the years of my addiction, and I harmed a lot of people when I wasn't even using or drinking. And I sort of bought into this idea that I was a poor choice maker. I bought into this idea that my moral compass was off. I bought into this idea that I was just a pretty shitty person. And I'll never forget when I finally understood, based out of experience, not knowledge, but based out of my experience, when it hit me like a ton of bricks, that I have an abnormal reaction. I have this fire that gets ignited somewhere between the second and the fifth drink. The magic happens. That fire lights up and it burns. And the fire burns as long as it wants. It eventually burns out, but I don't get to decide when it burns out. A lot of things happened after I picked up the first drink. But there was something that happened every single time I picked up the first drink. I picked up the second drink. And then the drink picked up the drink. Tarek was removed from the equation. I take a drink and the drink takes me. And then I discovered crack cocaine. And the same thing, except on a much bigger scale now. And the loss of control once I start is so clear to me. But all the horrific things I did were finally explained. All of the important engagements in my life that I missed were finally explained. All of those holiday parties with the family in which my mom told me not to get visibly intoxicated, and I got visibly intoxicated anyway, finally made sense. All the relationships that I destroyed because I lost control and I wasn't where I was supposed to be, or I did something that was mean. It's the word I'm going to use to describe it. Because I had lost control and my mind had been changed. The physical effect of what happens to us afterwards is not only in the I want more craving. Our minds actually are transformed. The effect is produced. In the early days, it was a positive effect. Alcohol and drugs were a solution. Then that imaginary line is crossed and they begin to do things to us and we can't see them because they used to do so much for us. And so I had a lot of guilt and shame. And so I have a buddy of mine that's in the program from time to time. And he's constantly in the fellowship. And he was on a crack run. This was a couple of years ago. And I'm sitting there on the phone while he's down in Statesboro smoking crack with his daughter's picture in his hands. And he's sitting there on the phone telling me, I can't believe I keep choosing crack over my daughter. And I said, Jeff, I said, you have no idea what the first step is. The first step clearly says that we've lost the power of choice. Once we start, we cannot stop. We're drinking and using to overcome a craving beyond our mental control. And when I saw that, I finally realized I didn't have a choice. I finally realized that I wasn't a bad choice maker. That I didn't have a twisted moral compass. I grew up with knowing what was right and wrong, like it within our culture. I had some values instilled in me. The physical craving, the abnormal reaction that we have to drugs and alcohol explained to me could account for... I could finally account for why I missed all those engagements, why I did those horrible things to those good people. Now, does this mean I can go tell these people, hey, I have this abnormal physical reaction, so when I start to use or drink and I lose control, that's why I did all that shit to you. That's why I treated you that way. That's why I wasn't there. That's why I didn't have the money. That's why I got fired. I can't do that. When I go out into the world to repair damage, all I can do is explain to them the harm that I was clear on. Yes, I was very mean. I called you this. I didn't pay you this. I wasn't here when I was supposed to be here. I didn't give you an honest day labor for the pay you were giving me. And I'm willing to do whatever I have to do to make that right. Did I leave anything out? Do you need to tell me how any of this makes you feel? That's an amends. I can't hide behind my addiction when I go make an amends. That's the way I've been taught. But understanding the loss of choice physically once I start will get you free of so much shame and so much regret and remorse, because you'll understand you're suffering from the physical feature of addiction and alcoholism. The loss of choice. Once I start, I lose power, choice, and control over how much. Does this make sense? Does anyone have a question? I watch guys over and over that believe that they have a choice, that they go on these 4 and 5 day runs because they actually have a choice. That's what they decided to do. They don't miss the physical component. So, to be honest, the physical is the easiest part to see. You know, and the way we're going to do this is we're going to do some simple subtraction and addition to start off with, which is the physical. And then we're going to go a little bit deeper, maybe some multiplication with the obsession and the mental. And then we're going to go a little bit deeper with some division. And that's the spiritual. But we have to start with what we can identify quickly, which is what happens after we start. Okay? All right, so now we're going to go to XXVIII. Is it triple I?
Yeah.
In your book, okay.
Yeah, for 2 pennies. Yeah, just a single I, right?
Yeah. Yeah. All right, here we go. We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol and drugs on these chronic alcoholics and addicts is a manifestation of an allergy, and the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate user or drinker, recreational drug user. These allergic types can never safely use drugs and alcohol in any form at all. And once having formed the habit, so this is where I'm going to start asking some questions. Do you believe you had formed a habit? Did you find that you could not break it? Did you lose your self-confidence? Did you lose your reliance upon things human? Did your problems pile up on you? Did your problems become astonishingly difficult to solve? Okay, I remember being at a big book study when this paragraph was read, and when I had finally been given this gift of surrender, and I said to myself, oh my God, this is me. They're talking about me. And then they say, frothy emotional appeal suffices. Frothy emotional appeal is, baby, will you just not, don't get high. Think of our kids, right? Think of our marriage. Think of your business. That's frothy emotional appeal.
Just say no.
Yeah, that's
frothy emotional appeal.
The message which can interest and hold alcoholics and addicts of my description must have depth and weight. Why are you guys listening to us tonight? Because I think in a few short hours, we've already won your confidence. You've identified with us. We have experience, and we have a solution that works. That's what depth and weight is. In nearly all cases, I want to turn this into a question. Do you believe that if you ground your life in a power greater than yourself, that that power will recreate your life? Okay. Skip the next paragraph. Tarek and Brandon, they drank, and Tarek uses essentially because he likes the effect produced by drugs and alcohol. Brandon, alcohol. The sensation, this feeling is so elusive. That means it's really hard to get. And while both of us will admit that it hurts us, we reached a point where we couldn't tell the difference between what was true and what was false. We couldn't tell the difference between what the alcohol and drugs were doing to us and what they were doing for us. We couldn't see the line anymore. We were uneasy or restless, irritable, easily annoyed, and dissatisfied or discontented with life. And unless Brandon and I can again experience that sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks or a few lines or a few hits or a few bangs in the arm. And here's the effed up part, that we actually see others do this with impunity, with no consequences. I had friends that were recreational crack smokers. They went through a period in their lives where they smoked crack recreationally, and then now they haven't smoked in years. You know, I had friends that were real bad off on dope. And for whatever reason, they didn't have all the consequences I did. It was a phase they were moving through, and they just moved through it. There are people out there, and your mind will identify them. And your mind will try to tell you, I am like them. That's why you must discover your truth. You can't use somebody else's truth. You cannot use someone else's experience. I must use my own memories. I have to use my own memories when it comes to this. So after I succumbed to the desire, we do, and we did so often, and the phenomenon of craving develops. That means my body breaks out in an itch. I want more. The fire is activated, and we pass through a well-known stage of a spree or a run. We emerge remorseful with a firm resolution not to use or drink again. I'm sitting in a hotel room down by the trap. I look in the mirror. I've been up for 3 days. I'm sweating. I haven't showered. This little teardrop comes out of my eye, and I look in the mirror, and I'm like, you're such a piece of shit. I'm never doing this again. I'm fucking done. I break all the stems. I get rid of all the alcohol. I take a shower. I go home. I start to feel better. Man, last night wasn't all that bad. You know what? I just need to go to a bar and get a couple of drinks. And I'm just going to sit up there. I'm going to watch the game. Maybe pop a couple of Valium. I'll puff a bowl and I'll be good. And 12 hours later, I'm back in the hood or the trap for another run.
Boom.
That's crazy. That's how it unfolds for me. This is repeated over and over, and unless Tarek and Brandon can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope for their recovery. See, the deal is alcohol and cocaine provided me with a much-needed psychic change earlier in life. Alcohol and cocaine did for me what I couldn't do for myself. They got rid of my insecurity. They gave me a purpose. They allowed me to live in a state of consciousness where I didn't think about my fear. If I was fearful and I was worried about how I was going to get some money to pay somebody, or I was going to not have money to pay my mortgage or any of that, and I went to the bar, between the second and the fifth drink, I wasn't thinking about any of that. I just wasn't. I was trying to help you. I wanted to see how I could be of service to you. Of course, somewhere after the fifth drink, that all goes away. If I could stay between the second and fifth drink, I'd still be drinking. And that's the reality of it. But I can't. My experience abundantly confirms that I can't. The best way for you to discover if you have an abnormal physical reaction, and you got to separate drugs and alcohol. Drug addiction and alcoholism are not the same thing. And if you're one, you're not automatically the other. All of us in here know people who could not take or leave alcohol, but they could take or leave drugs. I know people who couldn't take or leave drugs, but they could take or leave alcohol. They're two different things. And the reason we separate them is so you can find out your truth. Because check this out. We know that AA meetings far exceed the number of any other fellowship 12-step meetings, with the exception of maybe NA. You walk into Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and they're big on singleness of purpose. I respect singleness of purpose. When I go to an AA meeting, I do not talk about my experience with drugs. I limit it to my experience because I drank for 17 years, and I have a lot of drinking experience. So therefore, I see that I fit the description of the alcoholic in many areas of the Big Book. But I am first and foremost a drug addict. So I spent a lot of time in Cocaine Anonymous. I see people that have very little drinking experience walk into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. They raise their hands. The treatment center said, a drug is a drug is a drug. You just raise your hand, I'm alcoholic. You've just started a program of rigorous honesty with a lie. And that lie will work on your subconscious. Your subconscious would tell you, I'm not like these people. I didn't drink like these people. Wait. Maybe I can drink because I don't identify with these guys. That's how the mind works, the broken mind. This is why it's imperative to discover your truth in the first step. What did you have no control over once you started? There are some drugs that I had some control over. Does that mean I can do them today? No, because I'm powerless over where they're going to take me. But I do look and find out what is it that I lose power, choice, and control once I start. And I see it for alcohol, and I see it for cocaine. Once I start, I cannot stop. Physically, I am powerless over cocaine, a few other drugs, Valium and heroin and Oxycontin, to be specific. I have no physical power. The difference is I only have a mental obsession for two substances. Alcohol and cocaine. And I only served one master, crack cocaine. Why do I say that? Pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization was never caused by alcohol. That was only caused by crack cocaine. That was the master that I served. When I went all those trips to treatment and all those trips to sober living, never once did I say I showed up there because I had a problem with alcohol. I showed up there because I had a problem with crack cocaine. I'm clear on that, but I fit the description of the alcoholic. I just only serve one master, and I'm a guy that believes you can only serve one master. So part of what Brandon and I want to do by asking these questions is to get you to look at your experience and find out what master you served. So you can have a solid first step. You can see the hopelessness of your first step. And from a place of hopelessness, you will spring into hope in the second step. That's all I got. Good.
I'm an alcoholic. My name's Brandon. Has anybody seen a normal drinker drink? I'll describe one. I just think it's funny, and this is fun for me, so I'm going to... My wife is a normal drinker. Actually, she's not even normal. She's like whatever the level below normal would be. She's like... So she'll... Now, she drank probably heavily in college. She said she spent plenty of nights in the bathroom, sleeping on the floor. But so every once in a while, she'll tell me that she's in the mood for a beer, okay? And so, which I think is funny, because when she says she's in the mood for a beer, she'll go and buy herself a 6-pack of Mike's Hard Lemonade. And every time she walks in the door, I said, I thought you were in the mood for a beer. And she's like, I am. And I'm like, it's not beer. That's Mike's Hard Lemonade. So she'll take that Mike's Hard Lemonade and she'll open it. And then she will walk around the house with it, maybe fold some laundry, maybe, you know, do something. And then she'll lose it for a little while, right? And I think it's funny because she'll set it down in like the laundry room and she'll be like, she'll come up, she's like, have you seen my beer? And I'm like, it's Mike's Hard Lemonade. And I said, well, you were just in the laundry room. And she'll come out and she'll be like, oh, there it is, I found it. And so she'll drink on this Mike's Hard Lemonade for like 3 or 4 hours, this one, right? And then in the morning, I'll come down and it'll be sitting right next to the sink and this much is left in. And... I don't understand. She had she had a half for 3 hours and then left it on. And I told her, honey, you got to start dumping that shit out, because what's going to happen is I'm going to come down one morning, I'm going to be pissed off that you didn't finish it, and I'm not going to know what's going on, and I'll just throw it back, and then, you know, then we got other problems. So I'm like, dump that out. And then she'll take that six-pack, and it'll stay in the back right corner of the refrigerator and wreck the way that the refrigerator is organized for, like, weeks. Until, like, she'll have a second one. Usually when she gets it down to three, I'll take the box and throw it out and lay them down in the back corner. But that could take months, right? So that's the normal drinker in my life, right? So I had identification is so vitally important, because, like Tarek talked about, is a couple of years ago, there was a guy that I believe he was an alcoholic, but he was also a heroin addict, okay? And so this guy asked me to be a sponsor, and I'm like, you know, I know my way through the steps. I know how to deal. I know how to take somebody through the steps. You know, he's an alcoholic, so we're probably good. Doesn't matter that he did that little heroin thing over there. You know, no big deal, right? So what ends up happening is we get going through the steps, and he starts going through some withdrawals from some medicine and some other stuff, and the dude really, he's starting to really struggle with what's going on with him as related to the heroin. And so I see him one day, and I told him, dude, you look like shit. What's going on? And he's like, well, I'm really going through these, like, withdrawal things. And so what I said to him was, well, I do not have any experience with that. His mind slammed shut right in that moment. Because what I then continued to say was, but you can call this other guy, this guy, you can call this guy, you can call this guy. They all have similar experience with heroin, so they can talk to you, they can talk you through that, they can get down with you so that you can really understand what you're going through. His mind heard, I don't have any experience with that, I am different from you, and this will not work for me. Okay? So what does he do? He then decides that he's going to go try something else. He's going to go to church for a little while, and that's going to fix it. And I knew that he was headed out there, so I reached out to the guys in my network, Tarek and others, and said, give this guy a call, because he's getting ready to go off the deep end. And so he calls Tarek, and the thing that he tells Tarek is, well, I don't think that the steps are going to work for me right now, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to church, and then if that doesn't work, I'm going to come back. And what Tarek said to him was, are you sure you're going to be able to come back? And he's like, yeah, no big deal. No big deal. I'll come back. 2 weeks later, he's dead. Okay? So identification is vitally important for you to understand what you have, so that when you're sitting down across from somebody else, that you're hooking up with their experience. Now, you're an alcoholic. I talk alcoholic. We sit down. I can trade some of my stories. You trade some of yours. We can jive, right? Now, you're an addict. You sit down with me. You start telling me about some of the stuff that you did. I'm kind of going, I don't know that would have happened to me. Because my relationship with drugs is not there. So I have to know what I've got. And that's why you have to look at these steps and go into these steps from, am I an alcoholic or am I an addict? You've got to know your truth, so that you can communicate with your sponsor, and you have to know your truth so that you don't go out there and kill anybody that you shouldn't be sponsoring. Okay? So if you go to page 83, there's these things that are called the ninth step promises that the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous has adopted as the promises, as if they're the only ones. So I'm going to look at these promises as if I'm drinking. If we are painstaking about our drinking, we will be amazed before we are halfway through with the evening. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. In fact, I'm probably going to tell you about my past and all the stuff that, all the wisdom that I've gathered all over all the years while I'm drinking, right? We will comprehend the word serenity, because with those couple drinks that I've had, I will now be at peace. No matter how far down the scale I've gone with my drinking, I will see how my experience can benefit you, and I will share it with you all day long. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity that I walked into the bar with will disappear. I will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in my fellows. I'll have a conversation with anybody after I've been drinking for a while. Self-seeking will slip away. I want every woman in the room, I want to share myself with them. My whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. I can walk into a bar and think to myself, man, these guys are a bunch of jerks. And after, you know, 6, 8, 10 beers, I'm like, man, these people are really nice. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave me because I don't have to pay for the tab until, you know, the end of the night, and maybe even a couple weeks later I put it on my credit card. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. And I'll offer those. You can be talking about something I have no knowledge of, and I'll offer up plenty of solutions for you. I will suddenly realize that my drinks are doing for me what I could not do for myself. And so, when we start looking at when Tarek was talking about that psychic change, what happens when you start drinking or you start drugging? Psychic change. You are no longer the same person. Why do we drink? To change how I feel. To change who I am. Because I'm not okay with a perfect day on the lake. I need a perfecter day on the lake. You know, if it's raining, some more drinks make the rain go away. If in any situation, I'm trying to change it by a couple drinks. I'm trying to go numb. I'm trying to shift the way that I feel about things. Now, I'll go back and read some of the stuff that Tarek read and look at it from a different perspective. Actually, go to page 151 real quick. Last paragraph. Now and then, a serious drinker, being dry at the moment, says, I don't miss it at all. Feel better. Work better. Having a better time. As ex-problem drinkers, we smile at such a sally. We know our friend is like a boy whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits. He fools himself. Inwardly, he would give anything to take a half a dozen drinks and get away with them. He will presently try the old game again, for he isn't happy about his sobriety. He cannot picture life without alcohol. Someday, he will be unable to imagine life either with alcohol or without it. Then he will know loneliness such as few do. He will be at the jumping off place. He will wish for the end. Okay, that's where if you go to meetings and you just stop drinking, that's where you'll get. Now, say you've done the steps before. Let's go back to XVIII, 28 in Roman numerals. First full paragraph, third sentence says, the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. Okay? I'm sober for a little while. What form does alcohol take today? What is it dressed up like? Is it dressed up like more work, more sex, more money, more power? I've got to have a connection to my first step. I have to understand that those things are all just alcohol. XXVIII. So again, down on that same page, XVIII 28, men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. I effectively like to try to, I like to drink to, or I like to manage power, money, sex, because I like the effect produced. So I can be completely sober and still my alcoholism is creeping up inside of me.
Lack of proportion.
Mm-hmm. And after I've succumbed to the desire again, I'm now over on XXIX. After I've succumbed to the desire again, let's say it's sex, as so many do, the phenomenon of craving develops, pass through the well-known stages of a spree, and emerge remorseful. So now I'm going out and I'm having sex with a bunch of people that I'm not supposed to because I'm married to a woman I've committed to her. So now I'm having sprees of different types, emerging remorseful, knowing that I shouldn't go on and do that. And now unmanageability is creeping back up inside. The internal condition is getting more and more tight. That spring is getting tighter and tighter. And then, I know what'll get rid of this. The crazy thing is, I drink more than I find some other girl in the bar to go hit on and do it again. And then it gets worse. And then the cycle gets worse and worse and worse and continues and continues. But then in the next paragraph, on the other hand, and as strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once the psychic change has occurred, so once that shift has happened inside of me, once I have a spiritual experience, then the very same person who was doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol or drugs. The only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules. Anybody have any idea what the few simple rules are? Wow, you guys are good. So, psychic change. Go back to 567, Appendix 2. You got all that, right?
Yeah.
So, this is Appendix 2 called The Spiritual Experience. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading show that a personality change, circle the word change, sufficient to bring about recovery from alcohol is manifested, circle the word manifested, itself among us in many different, circle the word different, forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes, circle that, or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Circle that. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire, circle that, an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing fellowship of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, circle that, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop, circle that, slowly over a period of time. Quite often, the friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference, circle that, long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration, circle that, in his reaction to life, that such change, circle that, could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place, circle, in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided that he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. And then the quote from Herbert Spencer, there is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. So on page 567, they identify the word change, manifested, different, changes, upheavals, revolutionary changes, acquire, change, transformation, develop, difference, alteration, change, takes place. Does anybody know what any of those words mean?
Different.
Change. Something different than what I've been doing. So in order for me to get well and overcome this thing that we've been talking about, this psychic change that goes along with the physical manifestation of the allergy, I just have to change basically everything about my life.
Well, can I interject real quick?
Brandon just made a statement. I must change everything about my life. And the paradox is, when you finally concede to that idea, you realize there's nothing you can do to make it happen. So therefore, you must submit to this process. It's a paradox. Brandon's freedom came when he realized everything in his life had to change. My freedom came after spending some time incarcerated, where I realized everything about my life must change. And because of that hopelessness, because I saw that I couldn't do it, I could not do it on my own, that hopelessness sprung me into hope. The change is something that must take place. It's like later in the book they tell you these resentments must be mastered, but how? We can't wish them away any more than alcohol or drugs. We must have God's help. Same thing applies here. If you're questioning or have some resistance to what I'm saying right now, you need to go back into your first step. You need to get grounded in your first step. Because as I've sponsored people over the years, the only people that are going to be resistant to what I'm saying right now are people who still have hope that they will solve their problem.
So we hear a lot of times in meetings that people will say, well, I've already done my first step. I showed up at a meeting. We're not going to go through it, but I'm going to write up on the marker board how the table of contents is broken down into each step. And what you will learn is that the big book, there's 170 pages of recovery in it. And 50 of those pages are dedicated to the first step. So if just showing up at a meeting or just showing up here at Bridges of Hope means that you've done your first step, why the hell does the book take 50 pages to explain that to us? Well, when we come back, we'll continue to explain it. So, thanks.
Let's come back at... You want to do one?